One of the fun parts of surfing the quicksand is my midlife leap stories. And today I have a great one. I can't wait to introduce you to Jen Green because she's doing something that I think a lot of people dream about, but don't have the guts to make it happen. And she did. I'm your host, Kathy Bynes. This is Surfing the Quicksand. One of my favorite parts of the Surfing the Quicksand podcast has been meeting with people who I call the midlife leaps. These are women who, in their 40s and 50s, have made big switches in their professional purpose and really recast who they are in terms of their career, knowing that they still have a long path ahead of them for what they're going to do when they contribute to the world professionally. But it's not at all feeling like what they have been doing or what they started out thinking they would do forever. Today, I have a really interesting person I'm very excited for you to meet because she tells the kind of story that I hear a lot about in aspiration in my career coaching business. I often meet with people who say, you know, I'd love to be a teacher, but dot, dot, dot. Right, I see a lot of people who think they really think they might like being a teacher, but can't imagine taking that leap on their own. Today's guest did just that, and I'm so fascinated by her story. You're going to hear from it. You're going to hear where she started, what it was like to go back to school and really change everything, and what it was like to try and enter the workforce, which, by the way, is a young person's game when it comes to teaching. And she did it at this age and landed an amazing job. Please welcome Jen Green.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm
This is great.
so happy that you were open to sharing this story. And we have a mutual friend. And when I had reached out to some people saying, hey, who do you know who would be a great person to talk to about really taking a big swing professionally? She got to me right away and she said, I have the perfect person for you. And when I heard your story, I knew I wanted to talk to you. So let's start with the beginning, right? Your first act professionally. Tell me about what your professional journey was like before this shift.
Yeah, so I actually met like my first boss when I was in college, unbeknownst to me. I nannied every summer during college, and going into my senior year, he said to me, "Listen, you know, when you graduate, you're not going to be able to nanny for me anymore. It's just not, you know, a thing you're going to be able to do. So why don't you come and work for me full time?" He was gonna start a startup company in the grocery industry, which was his background. And when I did graduate, he said, "You know, come on out, come out." And I said, "Listen, I'm gonna go to grad school. I'm gonna become a teacher. Like that's my path." And he said, "Listen, you know, you can always go back to school. Like, come out here. If you like it, stay. And if you give it the summer and don't like it, go to grad school, you know, have at it." But I went out and I did love it, and I decided to stay. And I stayed for 3 years in San Francisco, where we ended up selling the business, and I went with it to Chicago, and then stayed with that business product now for a few more sales, loving Chicago, but ultimately landing myself in a new career in New York City. So, you know, 3 years San Francisco, 6 years Chicago, almost 12 years in New York City. And I thought to myself, like, wow, this has been amazing. All startup companies, not all with grocery, but into online advertising and then digital out-of-home media. And while I was working in New York, you know, working from home started to really become a thing. And I thought, why am I paying New York rates to live in a city where, like, now that I've been there for over a decade, you know, I could probably save some money and work from home anywhere else and probably save some money. Because I wasn't going out as much. I was a little older now, and while it's nice to have New York at your fingertips, it's also nice to save money for that retirement.
And was this before the pandemic?
This was before the
So
pandemic.
when you say that working from home was starting to be to come be a little more popular, this is way before it was
Oh
something that
yeah.
everybody was facing. Okay,
Oh
great.
yeah. And you tried to get away with it a little bit more, like, oh, I'm just gonna work from home these days. I'll get more in if I can work from home. Because commute could be like an hour on the train, So yeah, and my boss was really great. He was like, "Yeah, I know you. We've been working together a long time. If you want to move back to Massachusetts, go ahead." And so I did. So I moved back and I was working from home for, almost 8 years, 7, 8 years. And I'm with companies that seem to get bought and sold a lot. And so the company I was with, they sold one piece of their product away. And I went with it. And of course, this company, New York is a, everyone signs at will contracts because everything is in flux, So you feel kind of safe, but then in the back of your mind, you're like, this could always end. Who knows? And when we were sold 2 years later, that did come to an end. And I didn't expect layoffs. I was running a team, they were young, they were kind of dependent. Not super dependent, but they were still learning. And my part of the business was managing everything that sales brought in, from the contracts to the launching of a campaign. And we were, we had our hands in everything. We were like the center spoke of a wheel, touching everything, operations, marketing, the client, everything. So when I was laid off, it was just like, oh my gosh, like, what am I gonna do? And not only that, but just before I had been laid off, I had let the company know that I was diagnosed with MS, which is scary in and of itself. But I had kind of come to terms with that because I had started seeing symptoms the November before, laid off in May. So I was, okay, it's not a death sentence, we can do this. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, okay, so it's not a death sentence, but now there's no money coming in. A little bit more of a challenge here. Like, what are we going to do? And having the experience that I had, I thought, I'm going to get hired, no problem. This is, everyone loves me. My clients love me. I have a lot of colleagues in the business that, should be able to support me in finding something new. And while I did have a lot of support, everybody, this is now post-COVID, right? Everyone's being sent back into the office. They do not want to support people working from home anymore. They have leases to pay and they need bodies to fill seats in those spaces. So, I had opportunities to return to New York. I didn't want to do that. Now I had a house. I have a yard and a side yard. Who has a side yard? And a driveway and a big dog. And I just wasn't really willing to step back into places I'd been. Chicago was another opportunity. And I love both of those places, but sometimes going back to where you were is not that it's a step backward, but it's, I want to keep moving in a new direction. So while I was searching, I thought to myself, maybe, this is the universe telling me it's time to look into teaching. And I had always thought about teaching. I grew up in a family of educators. My grandfather particularly was really important in my growing up. Like, I could read when I was three, and it was because of him and all the readers in my family. He was an English teacher. He became a principal in my hometown. And he was kind of an inspiration in that capacity. And I love teaching. And I'm one of those annoying people that's always correcting someone's grammar, which is really suitable when you're teaching young children. But I thought to myself, I've always wanted to teach. And I said when I was retired from business, I would do that. And when I started having these little hiccups in finding work for, over a year anyway, I'm like, maybe I really should put all those eggs in one basket. Now, I didn't wait a year to like get moving on that. I thought, oh, I can go part time, and if I find a job, I can, go full time school. And if I find a job, then I can go part-time school.
You
But
mean if you find a job in your field, in your existing
in
field?
my existing field, yes.
Okay, yeah.
So, I didn't want to be sitting around. That's the thing. People, when they're talking to you in interviews, they're like, well, what have you been doing this whole time? You don't want to say, like, well, I've been watching television, or I've been sitting on the beach, in Jamaica, not doing anything because I thought it'd just land in my lap. You want to be like, I went hiking and I wrote a book and I thought, oh, well, going back to school, that's pretty good because
For
you're
sure.
spending so much time doing it. Like, even part time, I don't know how people go to school full time and have a full time job. Like, they're my heroes. And then you have ones that were working multiple jobs, going to school, and raising a family. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it because I had the dog and I was going back to school and it was, two classes for 8 weeks. And I thought that was a lot. So, and that was full time. So, yeah. So I decided, let me look into grad school. Let me take on the universe at its message of, like, maybe you're done with business. And I wasn't quite finished with business yet, but I thought, I'm gonna apply. And I did get in, and I started the fall after my layoff. So I was laid off in May, started school in October. And I kept looking, and I was, on the one hand, super excited, like, I'm starting school, I loved school, couldn't wait to, like, dive into, like, all of that information because it was so new. Like, it's this fresh new world of information that's so opposite to everything I'd been doing my whole career. And then I was kind of sad that my career was kind of shutting down because I wasn't getting the same, excitement from the people I was speaking to, and I wasn't getting those same job offers I was getting when I was younger. I thought to myself, geez, if I were 28, I bet you I would have had that job.
Yeah,
Because
it's a really interesting way of you talking about that this wasn't just a break in a hard line of, this is my old career, now this is my new focus, right? There's a little bit of, well, maybe that'll still work out for me, right? So
yeah.
wasn't you didn't have both feet jumped into the new space, but also as I'm hearing you talking, a little bit of kind of mourning and grieving and the emotional processing of it being somewhat your choice, right? Your being out of work certainly wasn't your choice, but the
Right.
idea of saying like, oh, how hard am I going to work? What I'm not willing to go back to Chicago. I'm not willing to go back to New York, right? You'd already kind of extinguished a few options for yourself.
Yeah.
So some of it was on your terms,
Right.
but still, does it make kind of that pain and that reflection of an identity shift any easier?
Yeah, it's true because I felt like, I had been spending years making the New York business stuff work. Like, when they needed me, I could take the train in a pinch, I could just drive out, I could stay for as long as needed. And even as good as I was, not just in my head, like, these people that were going to hire me knew I was good. I mean, I have a great relationship with the New York Yankees. I mean, Red Sox fan, but I had a $1 million contract through advertising and lots of other things. But those were some of my connects, and it just wasn't enough to come once every 3 weeks. That wasn't enough. And it kind of made me sad because no matter how good I was, it was like, well, we need you in the office. So yeah, it was definitely a mourning because I loved what I did. And so yeah, it was a while before I said, okay, I got to take all the eggs and put them in the basket here. Because at the end of school, like, after the end of all your classes, there's a 4 month stretch of student teaching. So I kind of had to call it. It's like, do you want this or not? Because you can't have both anymore. It's like, now you're at the end, right? You're in the new year, basically, it was like January, February. I'm like, you kind of have to make a decision because if you get a big job and you start, say, in April, where are you going to turn around and say at the end of August, well, it's been nice, gotta go, because now I have the student teach. There's no way around. I can't part-time student teach,
Nope,
you
no, you
know?
sure
And
can't. I'm curious, tell me about so I hear that you left in May, but by that fall you were in classes. So how did you go about researching how to even do this and how to even start looking
yeah.
at a teaching career and going back to school?
Yeah. So the first thing I did was connect with some of my friends that teach and, you know, ask them about the process, what you have to do to get a license. You know, there's, you know, testing that you have to do. You have to, you know, go through an educator program through an accredited university, through, you know, in Massachusetts anyway, for me. And you kind of have to follow all the guidelines of what Massachusetts expects of you and which kind of which program you want to be in. Do you want to be early elementary, so you're dealing with those young kids? Do you want to be elementary, which is what I want to do, or middle school, or do you want to teach high school? Do you want to teach special education? Do you want to do both? And for me, I thought, you know, elementary is where I want to be. I love little kids. They love me. It's probably because I'm short. I don't know. They can, you know, I'm only like a little over 5 feet. I say 5'1", but it's like a little over 5 feet. So I think they like me a lot because of that. So elementary, so I was 1 through 6. So if I wanted to move up a little bit, down a little bit, but first grade was kind of my sweet spot. So I talked to a few first grade teachers and they were like, listen, you know, elementary is great. You're teaching all of the subjects, you know, and it's really important because this is where they're forming their literacy, right? This is where they're forming their math skills. They're forming kind of their likes and dislikes at this early age, you know? So I was like, I'm so excited about showing them all of the things. And some of the teachers that I spoke with, they're like, oh, well, you don't have to worry about teaching science and you don't have to worry about teaching social studies. And I was like, I want to teach that stuff. Are you kidding me? This is great. And a lot of my friends were like, you know, don't think it's so easy. And I was like, no, I don't think that it's easy. Gosh, no. Like, I don't have children myself because I know how hard they are to work, you know, to raise and do all of the things with. But, you know, I don't expect it to be easy. I just expect that I'm going to enjoy a lot of it. And I know my teacher friends do too, and they've been doing it for 20 years, you know? So I appreciate it there. You know, it's not so easy. It is a lot of hard work. And you see from the outside, like even in regular business, I'm like, oh my gosh, they don't get paid enough. They don't have enough resources. Everything falls back on the teacher. They're not only a teacher, but they're like a psychologist and they're a daycare and they're all of those things. But none of those were detractors from my interest in becoming a teacher. It's something I've always felt that I wanted to do. And I think I incorporated it, you know, from being a nanny, having four younger sisters also, but having teams that I ran, having, you know, teammates that I mentored and watching them grow and thrive. Like I never built a team with people I thought were less smart than I. I tried to build a team with people I thought were smarter than I was so that they could grow and go on. You know, I was in account management and it's not for everybody to stay in forever. Some of my team did go on to lead account management teams themselves, or customer success, they call it today.
Yes.
But others went on to be salesmen. Some went on to be marketing professionals. Some moved to Europe and, you know, started doing things over there with bigger companies, and they're thriving. I have one person that I hired, and he went to the same university as I did. And he's just amazing. He had his own backpack company, his own podcast. I mean, he's a real hustler, and he still is in the online industry. So he's like jack of all trades, doing all the things, and I couldn't be more proud than if he were my own, you know? So it's, I feel like through my career, I've kind of had that, education piece poking
Yeah,
in.
and developer, right? And being able to tap into what people's strengths are or identify where they had some rough edges and guide them through learning. And I think you're absolutely right. After 20 years in human resources, I could say for sure a lot of time it's like a bunch of first graders, right? So, and it like, what are we doing and how do we match it to what we need to do and what you're good at and what you like doing and how do you, and the great managers are really put themselves first and foremost as developers of their people.
So it made sense to me, like, okay, this is the right shift, this is the right thing to do. And I was really excited, like the having, a million papers to write. I forgot how much I like to write papers.
Yeah, let's talk about
That's
school.
fun.
So, what was it like to go back to school?
I was so nervous. I was so nervous. And I did all my classes online. There were a few that I could attend in person if I wanted to, so I did, which was fun. But having the online opportunity was great because I got to set my own schedule based on what was due when. And you had 8 weeks, and like I said earlier, I had two classes at a time. But geez, some of those classes, I wrote like 20 papers in an 8 week time frame, and it blew my mind how much reading and writing and research and all of it. I was like, I just didn't really have much of a life until that 8 week window was done, and then I might have had like 3 days before the next two classes began. But it was awesome. I mean, aside from the citing, everybody has their own way. Like in my old
Citations,
days.
like citations in your papers, you mean? Okay,
The old way was like put a little asterisk and a number, and then at the back, you have everything listed nicely. But no, it's not like that anymore.
No.
So once I got used to that, it was pretty good. Learning how to write lesson plans for different subjects, that was an interesting, tool I learned, interesting skill. But I loved it. I loved everything the teachers had to say, my peers in the classes. I made some really good friends, and we would talk like after class and, kind of bemoan the situation of like, oh my gosh, how are we gonna do this? And that teacher's crazy. Like, what is happening? And it was just like, earlier in university getting my bachelor's. So we definitely commiserated over that.
And two things that I think, as a person in my 50s, like I also did, I did a certificate program of over 4 semesters at Boston University, gosh, about 15 years ago. And same thing, like it was all online, even though I lived walking distance to BU at the time. So all online. And it was that asynchronous learning, right? It wasn't like there was a set time of lectures at 2 p.m. on Wednesday. It was watch the video, chime in on discussion groups, and it was kind of manage your classes and your work on your own schedule. But I think not everybody will be great at that, right? It's a lot of time management. It's a lot of focus and willpower and discipline to say, I'm in charge of my pacing. Whereas when we went to college, we definitely were not in charge of our pacing. We were not in charge of our environment and where and how we went to school. Did you find that doing it this way was more comfortable or less comfortable than you imagined it might be, knowing it was your first time?
I think I was more comfortable than I thought I would be. We did have a nice set schedule for class time, but I loved that every class was recorded, so I could always go back and check things if I needed more, verification on different items. I also liked the fact that the professors weren't on my heels about where's this paper, where's that paper. I could have handed in every single paper in the 8th week if I wanted to, and no one would have said a word. And I kind of appreciated that because it usually took me, I like to do all the reading, because I love the reading part. So I liked that I could take the first 2, 3 weeks and really sink my teeth into the topic. And then, as I'm reading, having my little set outlines, knowing what my paper is needed to be about, so I could set, and again, it's to your point, the organization and time management and knowing myself and my skill set, that certainly helped me. So I was surprised at how much I did enjoy that piece of it, having the time, having my own set schedule, but also having that class schedule. And the teachers were also fantastic because they always made themselves available. Like I could go to school and have a meeting with them. I could call them before or after class. Like that part was awesome. I don't think I could ever really see a lot of my professors in, my early years. Like they had office hours, and if you missed it, that was it. You were a, pff,
Yeah.
forget
And
it.
I feel like I know a lot of kind of college age kids or friends of college age kids where they're just begging their kids, like, go see the professor, go see the professor. And so even if they were available that much, it doesn't mean that people would take advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you end up you that first semester you're really focused on this classroom and digital and at distance classroom experience. And then I heard you say then in the spring you got 4 months of student teaching. How does that pivot unfold for you?
Yeah, so, during the school, you have like 3 pre-practicums, they call them. So it's like 15 hours of learning for different segments, right? So one is for math, one is for social and emotional learning, English as a second language, things like that. So I'd had already these 45 hours under my belt in 3 different elementary schools. And so at the end, you kind of had a little summer break. And then in the fall, it was like, okay, now it's 4 months of full time, you're doing it. And I was super nervous about that. Like the class part, I was like, yeah, I got that. The school part, I was like, okay, now, this is real. This is real now. And I have to hope that this is going to be like exactly what I wanted. Because it's like one thing, you're like almost playing school, 15 hours is like, whatever, I got that. And you don't have to really do anything because you're not the teacher. You're observing. And I mean, I participated. They were like, participate as much as you want, or, sit back and take notes. And I was like, oh, I wanna do it. Like, yeah, like I'm in. But when I transitioned into student teaching, my teacher was awesome. And she was like, listen, I'm gonna show you the ropes, and then you take on as much as you want. She's like, I'm happy to kick back and let you run the show and jump in when you need a hand. But she was fantastic. Just let me have as much independence in the classroom as I wanted and time with the kids. And she spent a lot of time with me, like before and after school and during, to just say, here's what you can do differently. Here's how I would have handled that. Like behavior. When's the last time I was around 22, 6-year-olds? This was a first grade class, and I definitely needed the support and the advice and all of her experience, which was really fantastic. So it was definitely not managing salespeople, which you think would be easier, but the kids are easier than salespeople. I'll tell you that. So. That part was easier for sure.
So how you end up doing your student teaching? Sounds like you have a really supportive mentor teacher who's kind of guiding you to be as participative as you want. You're getting that real life, we're not playing school anymore. I'm actually like semi in charge. Then you graduate and it's time to go get a job. How does that go?
So, I had a few exams that I needed to take to qualify for my license. So I had my degree. I from the right place in the right state for everything. I take my tests all through January, like December, January, passed all of them first try. I was terrified. I didn't know that that would be possible because everyone said they were nightmare tests. So passed all those. And just I started looking and I thought, gosh, I have to get something because I had, a severance package, I had health insurance, but then those things end. And then it's like, oh, now I have to go into my savings. And it's not New York, but it's bills pile up. And then I also have, a student loan. So
Yeah.
there's that.
And you have a health condition that's,
And
not a death sentence, but it's a headline.
it's definitely
Yeah.
all those things,
Yeah.
like they add up, and in your head, you're just like, okay, like you took the time to do all these things. And in my head, I'm like, okay, you're going to school, so you're not doing nothing, but you have to have a job because unemployment only goes so long. And it's like playing, ping pong in your head, and you're like, oh my God. So I was like, I need to find something. And my principal that I'd been student teaching with, he actually recommended me for a spot at a school in my town for a math interventionist position. So it was like I had only been looking for like 5 seconds, and boom, I had an interview. So I was super excited about that, but then tried to tone it back because will I even get that job? It's great experience. So that's how I went in. It's great experience. I'm interviewing in a field I'd never done before, with so little to talk to. I just have these little pre-practicum hours, and I had these 4 months of being a student teacher, and that's it. I've never been a math interventionist before. I know my way around Excel, but I don't think they want me to teach that. So, but I did get the job. So they were like, we'd love you to start basically tomorrow. And I was, my birthday was coming up. So I thought, well, maybe we do it the Monday after my birthday. So it was just like a week later. But I was so excited that I got to do that. And take advantage of getting that experience. And mind you, it was my 50th birthday. So it wasn't like a little, oh, I just turned 33.
I get it. Yeah,
It
that's a big deal. That's a big
was
deal.
significant. Big deal. So I started and learned a ton. I was working with first through fourth graders, which they taught me a lot, little groups, really tight knit, just learning how their brains operated. And I was a hater of math growing up, but what I learned in grad school changed my world. If I had been taught the way I learned in grad school, I would have fallen in love with math. So that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my goal for these kids who all mostly hated math because they didn't understand it. So when the light bulb started going off, I was like, this is it. I made the best choice I possibly could because these haters of math started turning a corner. It's no more like, this is the way you do it because I said so. No, it's like, oh, you don't understand? Let me show you another way. Let me show you another way. There are all these ways. I'm like, don't let anyone ever tell you there's only one way to do something, because let me tell you, we have all different ways and you can all do it differently and still be right. So we're good. So, I mean, it was an amazing experience for me. But then it came to an end because it's a part-time position. And while they definitely wanted me to come back in the fall, I needed a full-time job. I needed to not pay health insurance anymore. It was sad to not have a full-time job at that school. They're lovely people, like a beautiful little school. It's like 8 minutes away from my house. That would have been amazing. So then the real interviewing really started, and it was tough. And I think, having a new administration walking in the door, that maybe isn't so affectionate with our education, made it a little bit more difficult because the money was turned off and people got a little bit afraid of losing the talent they had for talent they didn't know. I mean, all they knew of me is, oh yeah, she just graduated and she did a little part-time gig for this one school. They still have to train you up. They need to show you, like, here's how you deal with, an IEP, and here's how you deal with 504s, and here's what you do, with other behavioral issues that might pop up, and parents, and progress reports, and parent-teacher meetings. There's a whole gamut of things that are still, they don't teach all of it in grad school.
And
So
so I'm imagining you're 50, as we've established at this time. You're sensing from some of these school districts that they're kind of holding back a little bit because they don't really know what's going on kind of federally in the school system world and Department of Education, and it's got people a little bit on edge. And they recognize that not only are they going to have to train you up because you're a total newbie, but you're 50, right? Like, they're not going to get 20 years out of you, right? Forget about 50, can
better
she
get
even do
20.
it? It's like, oh, this is not the person who, it's not like investing in a 23-year-old.
Yeah, it's true. And I think a lot of the schools, my resume doesn't read, oh, she's 50. It's got the last 7 to 10 years on it, which, but you walk in the door and it's like, I don't think I look 50, but I certainly don't look like I'm in my 20s. So, I think that was a detriment to me sometimes walking in the door. And no matter how, vibrant and excited you are, in the back of their minds, they're like, I need someone with experience. I need someone with 3 to 5 years experience to come through this door, and that's not you. And some of the positions that were available, I tried to interview for everything. I was like, I'll interview for a paraprofessional role, even though I knew it wasn't going to pay the right money. I wanted to see what it was like to interview for something like that. I interviewed for, a long-term sub position because I thought, well, at least I can get some experience in the door, even if, it's only short term. And then I was interviewing for full-time positions. And I tell you that in Massachusetts, it was so difficult. Unless I was willing to drive 2 hours west, which I was not willing to do. I love to drive, but that's, crazy. So, I continued setting up interviews, and SchoolSpring is a great resource. You go in every day. I was in there hunting for different positions.
That's the website that a lot of educational organizations post their jobs, right?
Yes,
Yeah,
yep.
okay.
So that's where I would be every morning, drinking my coffee, looking to see anything new that was available kind of close by. And then, I decided I was going to get my license in New Hampshire, a reciprocal license, because my sister's in New Hampshire. I love going up to New Hampshire. I'm on the river a lot, all the different rivers, hiking, everything. I love being up there. So I thought, oh, if I get my reciprocal license, then that's more opportunity, and I don't have to go too far into New Hampshire to find that. So I started that process and I got my license, and wouldn't you know, I had an interview pretty quickly, and they were amazing. Lovely people, the principal, the vice principal, one of the teachers. Like, they've done a lot of renovating with the school. Like, everything was great. And after that interview, like maybe an hour later, I was given an offer.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's funny, it was the it was not the first offer I'd gotten. There was another offer I'd gotten, and they that it was closer, and they had said, like, oh, and now the $65,000 question. And I was like, oh my God, that will work, because I wasn't expecting much over 50. And I was like, oh, I'm like, okay, what's the offer? And they were like, 42. I was like, and they were like, and the insurance, we don't really do it. It's not very good. And I was like, bad, bad. I respectfully decline. But New Hampshire came through, and I've never been happier. Like, it's a wonderful place. I've been getting such great experience, and The other thing I did, I'm willing to not keep all my eggs in one basket anymore. They are all in the basket for education, but I was like, okay, I can have my Mass license, I can have my New Hampshire license, and I can also put in for the Department of Defense education. So I thought my dog passed away while I was, job hunting. And I thought, well, now I don't have to stay in the United States. I can go elsewhere. So I did get the New Hampshire job, but I had referrals for the military. And that's referrals just means like you could interview possibly. So there were a bunch of referrals out there, but I accepted this job. But I was like, okay, you don't have to just stay in one place now. You can look elsewhere.
And it sounds like, I mean, the idea that like Department of Defense and leave the country right now, you're really leaping the midlife leap. I'm saying like everything is on the table, and it's interesting to think about saying, okay, well, as long as my dog is in the picture, I need a place with a side yard, right? Like you're kind of grounded. You're grounded in terms of where you are, the kind of place you live, the kind of schedule you have, and dogs, kids, aging parents, right? There are all sorts of reasons why we can feel stuck and not feel like we have options. And so, that's a big part of this. That's the whole point of this podcast for me, is helping midlife women get unstuck. Sometimes they don't even realize what's keeping them stuck.
Well, there's a lot of fear. You get comfortable with your lifestyle, with your job status, with your title, maybe, even though titles don't really mean much these days. But you get comfortable where you are, what you're doing. And like I remember when I was leaving Chicago, like I was leaving everything I knew to go into this new world, right? So leaving like supermarket, leaving, all this that business behind, because one of my friends, another salesperson, had said, "Hey, we're doing this targeted marketing stuff in New York City. We need you to run a team. Like, can you come?" And I was like, "What? Get out of here. I love Chicago. I'm New York. I'm from Boston. I'm not gonna live in New York." And he's like, "Just come. Just come and interview." He's like, "You like me? I wouldn't steer you wrong." He's like, "We'll fly you out, interview, hang out for the weekend, have a good time on them. And then you can say no if you don't like it." And I flew out, and they were amazing. And I got an offer that day. My friend had bought a house, with a first floor apartment. And she's like, "You can live here for this money." And I said, "Well, I guess I'm moving to New York." Like these things, you don't expect them to happen. And everything, not that everything happens for a reason, but I feel like sometimes the universe does speak to you and say, like, "You know what? You said you couldn't do this because you wouldn't like that and you wouldn't like this and you probably couldn't afford a place to live. Well, all of that just lined right up for you. So guess what? Get out of Chicago and go check it out." And I feel like the same thing happened with the school in New Hampshire. It's that, my dog had passed away and some windows did seem to open up. And, I probably could have waited, and I did get a job offer from one of the bases down in the southern states. Not the Spain that I wanted or the Japan. But I was like, all right, so at least I can't, they're looking at me. But to get that offer in New Hampshire, it was like, okay, the dog isn't there anymore. You don't have to worry about being too far away from him for too long. And, this is, you don't have to wait on Massachusetts to come around because, look, this is a great school. These are great people. And if I had sat and waited to find that job, I might still be waiting because I have friends that, are even higher level than I am, who are willing to take a step back, willing to take a lower position, who still don't have work. And they're on over 3 years
Oh
now,
my
no
gosh.
job.
Yeah.
And I want to say, if I wasn't teaching, I'd be like, let's build a company ourselves. It's time. We have the experience, we have the know-how, we have the contacts, and enough, saved somewhere to like throw in and get something started. Because it's brutal out there, and there is a lot of ageism out there, and 28-year-olds, 30 somethings, they don't want to hire someone with more experience because I don't think they're all threatened, but I think they're a little bit threatened. Oh, the experience, and will we want to take their job? And we really don't. We don't really want to take your job.
I really do find, right, I think that that dynamic you're talking about, right, I'm 20 years older than my potential manager. I think a lot of things are part of that, right? So it may be, gosh, I'm afraid they're going to come after my job, or they're going to want my job, which, by the way, can also feed into their own sense of insecurity or their own saying, like, can I even manage people this age? I think sometimes it's also they don't know how to manage people that they don't necessarily relate to as junior to them, right, in age or other qualifications and experiences. And so, and that sometimes it's even, gosh, she's 50. Does she even know how to use Excel? There can be just, silly assumptions and things like that. But I do believe whether it's something people are aware of or something they're not aware of, that discrimination, absolutely, kind of that age bias shows up a lot in hiring and developing and promoting. I am curious. You mentioned kind of it's in New Hampshire, and a lot of people who don't know Massachusetts don't realize how close parts of New Hampshire really are. So how long is your commute?
Okay, so it is a little bit of a commute,
Okay.
but I think about my commute in New York, and my commute in New York could be like 45 minutes to an hour. I have a friend who works in Cambridge, which isn't far from Boston. I am about 25 minutes north of Boston, like directly north. Takes her about an hour every day to get there. It takes me 45 minutes. 45 minutes, that's
Yeah.
no big deal.
It's really hard to get a commute around Boston that's not 45 minutes, right? Even if you're 12 mi you're 25 minutes north of Boston, but it wouldn't be a 25 minute commute at 8 in the morning for sure.
Right,
Right.
no.
Yeah.
And I like my schedule. I like to be early. I don't want to be in traffic. And I am taking a reverse commute. So
Sure.
I'm driving north. So I leave like 5:30, 5:45 in the morning. And even if I left a little bit later, I wouldn't hit traffic until I got to the school area because I don't need to be there until about 8 o'clock. But then parents are dropping off and there's buses and it's a mess. And I don't want to deal with that. All those people.
Good. The last thing I want to kind of touch on is kind of what do you think made you successful in this? Made you successful in listening to the voice saying maybe now's the time, in being able to pursue a path and do the mourning and letting go of what there was, in having the diligence to march forward, in being open to, okay, maybe it's not going to fit the perfect picture for me. Maybe I am going to have to compromise on some things. What do you think in your life has helped you get through these few years to be successful?
I think my family's had a lot to do with it. I think, when I first moved to California, I was 22 years old. I had nothing really. I had a car and I filled it with my stuff, which was nothing. And I drove across the country, but I was really kind of afraid. I knew I had a job. I knew I had a place to stay until I found something, but I was really scared. And my dad said to me, "Jennifer, you can always come home." And he's kind of said that every time I'm doing something I'm afraid of. And he's like, "You can always come home." And I think that's nice. Like, I might not have the big bank account, I might not have a husband, right? And now I don't have my dog, but I still have his words always echoing, "You can always come home," meaning we're gonna be here. We're gonna help you. We're gonna take care of you. You can always start over. There's nothing that, we're not going to love you for, right? So you can always come home. And the first time he said it to me, it just really resonated because I always thought that if I came home, it meant I was failing. And he was saying exactly the opposite. You gave it a go, didn't work out, you didn't like it, you're going to do something different. You can always come home. This is a safe place.
I might actually cry. That was really lovely. That's really lovely.
Wow.
I'm so glad that we've had this opportunity, that I got to hear this story in such depth. And really, I think, as I said from the beginning, your story is inspiring. What you've been able to achieve is inspiring. Your story is not over. I know you're just starting this chapter, and I'd be fascinated to hear where it goes from now. But like I said in the beginning, I work with so many people who are like, oh, I would pursue this if only, right? If only I didn't have this. If only I had that. Oh, I'm too old. It's too late. And you've really been able to demonstrate that that's a lot of self-talk and assumptions that can be challenged and can be conquered.
Yeah, it's fear. And once you set that aside, you can do anything. You really can. I mean, you don't have to have all the money. You don't have to have all those other things. You just have to have yourself and know that you can do it. And even if you failed at some part of it, like if I didn't pass a class, all right, it's going to be a little extra money, but you can do it again. You can get help. There's all sorts of things that you can do to tackle it. And if you want it, it's there. You just have to grab it and get rid of that fear because it's just you talking to you. So once you get over that bit, then you're great, and anyone can do it.
I mean, I can just imagine you saying everything you just said to a class full of first graders and being very inspiring. They are lucky to have you.
Thank you so much.
I want to switch to the section where I ask all of my guests the quicksand three, which are three questions very much aligned with kind of the purpose of surfing the quicksand. So
Yeah.
the first is, what is a trick or technique that you use to get yourself unstuck and take on something you've been avoiding?
Yeah. So I have two tricks, and they might seem like avoidance techniques, but they're not. They're really refreshing techniques. One is to take a nap. I find that taking a nap kind of always resets, and it might be because I dream almost every single time I sleep. It's amazing. I have a dream journal I've kept since I was in high school, maybe, where I don't write everything down, but I write a lot down because it's rare that I don't dream. So I nap with the intent of having a dream that kind of shakes things up and I wake up energized. So that's
Gosh.
number one. If I'm not tired enough to take a quick nap, and I usually can always nap, I read. I get out of my world and get into somebody else's because it stops me from thinking or overthinking really about what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. Clears the slate. And then when I'm done, I set it. And it's not forever. It's like an hour for a nap, an hour for a read. Resets everything, gets you to go out and continue at a fresh pace.
Very strategic. I love it. Next question, which almost seems weird to ask, is if time and money and period in history and location and skills were not an issue, what's a career or job you might have liked to have tried?
I think I really would have wanted to be a travel writer. Just exploring the world, meeting lots of new people, checking out different cultures, doing everything everywhere and writing about it so people would come explore. And I'm also kind of glad that didn't happen because I hate to be the one telling people to go to all these wonderful places and messing them up. Like, I don't want them to do that. I don't want people to go to New Zealand. That's my place. Like, don't go there. Don't make it dirty. Yeah, but I would have liked to do that. Like, just to travel and see all those places. And I am a big traveler, so it would have been right up my alley. Love to write, travel, done.
So great. Finally, the last question, when life gets chaotic, what is a way that you recharge or hit the reset button?
Aside from napping and reading, I have an amazing garden. I love to garden. I love to hike. I used to love to hike with my dog. Now my sister has to, take his place. But I still like to travel too. Like I go to Ireland every July. I see my girlfriends from college. Because I did 1 year abroad in Cork, Ireland. But yeah, traveling, hiking, being outside is a really good reset. You get that energy from the outside, the animals, the garden, flowers. And when you're hiking, you're hearing all the things. You're away from all the things that are probably irking you, and you need to that reset. And nature has a way of doing that for you.
I love it. Jen, it was so wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for your generosity of your time and your story. And I know that it's going to inspire others to maybe face some of those fears.
I hope so. Thank you so much for inviting me and allowing me to open up and share what I have for others.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
She just exudes inspirational energy, doesn't she? Right. And like, I mean it when I said at the end, like, oh my gosh, if you were a classroom teacher, how just empowered and buoyant must those kids be to get that kind of energy and that perspective and outlook? So wonderful that somebody who was clearly meant to have this kind of a career finally faced her fears and made some tough things happen to see if she could reinvent her professional purpose in life. I'm so thrilled that I got to spend an hour with her and introduce her to you. I'd love to hear how this story inspires you. So feel free to comment on this podcast or head over to quicksandpod.com and share in the contact form any ideas you have about this one, or if you know another great midlife leap story that you think we need to hear. I'd love to hear about it.